The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to Women at Acme. I'm so excited for today's episode with Elisa Beatty. It is about a subject that I honestly didn't realize how important it was to so many people. PCOS is something that I was diagnosed with when I was in my fertility journey. I never knew I had it before. I was on birth control, which masked it. And I just didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how to live with it and the right things to eat, the right things to do. So this episode is really helpful for someone who has PCOS. I just want to tell you some background, which is that this episode was actually recorded in like June or July. So I think I was early stage pregnant, but I wasn't telling anyone yet. And then also I lost the SD card, which had my audio for this episode. So the sound is not going to be as good as it normally is. So I really apologize for that. I took my entire apartment apart looking for it and I couldn't find it. And that's what I get for sitting on this episode for so long. I also wanted to say at the end of the episode, or like, you know, throughout the episode, Elisa talks about certain things that might come in the way and harm your PCOS, like, you know, detergent and dryer, like things like that. And of course, you have to make your own choices. I think that anyone's advice could be a little bit extreme. And I wouldn't recommend just cutting everything that you think is bad out of your life if you have PCOS. Like, you still have to live. You know, a lot of these organic, unscented things are really expensive. So I just wanted you to know that no one's going to be perfect, especially someone who has PCOS, because we are dealing with a lot to begin with. We don't need the stress of having to do everything perfectly. So if you were recently diagnosed or if you've just had PCOS for a while, don't be hard on yourself. And before we get into that, I'm going to play some of your voice memos or voicemails from speakpipe.com/wemetatacme and give you some of my advice.
Hi, Lindsay. I am just curious if you have any advice for attending a wedding 1000% solo, like not in the city I live in. For context, I live in New York City and the wedding is in DC. So I'm going to be there for basically the weekend. I did not get a plus one, which is fine because I'm not in a long-term relationship. But I am not close with anyone going to the wedding either. Maybe a few girls I know from college will be there. Obviously, I know the bride, but she's going to be busy. And yeah, I just have no idea what to expect. And I'm obviously a little nervous. I can definitely make small talk with the best of them, but I was just wondering if you had any advice. Thanks.
So I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that it's going to be great and you're going to make so many friends. It's really hard to go to a wedding alone, especially if it's someone's wedding who isn't, like, if this person isn't your best friend. Because if it's your best friend's wedding, it's basically your wedding. Like, you know everyone, you're able to socialize easily with anyone, like their uncle even. But when you go to a wedding totally solo of a not great friend, it can suck, you know, and of course you can get lucky. And of course it's great to have a good attitude and just be of service to the bride and show up. And it's going to mean the world to her that you're there. But I wouldn't go into it expecting to have this like amazing time. I wouldn't expect it to be bad because you don't want to do that either, but just go in with no expectations, go in knowing that the bride and groom really thoughtfully decided where to place you and maybe, you know, look to your left and look to your right and across the the table from you, and maybe there's someone around who would be good to know. And I would look at it as, oh, I get to meet some new people. Not like I'm going to meet my husband, not I'm going to make new best friends, just like I get to meet interesting people. And make sure you do something like a bookend, which is something that basically you are like rounding out the night. So you do something in the beginning before you get there that is like, you know, good for you. Like maybe it's, you know, you go and get a manicure that makes you happy, or like a massage at the nail salon, right? And then you do something after that makes you happy. So you, let's say you order room service when you get home and you watch your favorite feel good movie. You got to make sure that you're prioritizing yourself. And if that means you have a hard out at like 11:30, that's okay. No one's going to notice. And it's just really sweet that you're showing up for this person at all. And it's going to mean a lot to them.
Hi. So I'm in a 6.5-year relationship with my boyfriend, and we both struggle with mental health issues. He specifically has struggled with depression, which I think potentially affects his sex drive. At the beginning of our relationship, we had a lot of sex, but after like a year, it started dwindling, and sometimes we'll go several weeks without having sex, and it just makes me feel like I'm not hot or sexy. But during like a good month, we'll probably have sex like once a week, and I just feel self-conscious initiating because I want him to initiate, so I know that he wants me. But he has voiced that when it completely falls on him to initiate, he gets in his head thinking to himself whether like he's initiating enough or doing enough. So I'm just struggling to figure out how to make our sex life better and wanted your advice.
So this is a really great question, and we have an episode which is perfect for you to listen to with experts on the topic. So I'm not going to sit here and say I know exactly what to tell you, because if I were you, I'd be frustrated too. It's called How to Keep the Spark Alive, featuring Vanessa and Xander Marin. It's a couple, and they talk about, you know, from a male perspective and a female perspective, the whole idea of initiating and exactly what your frustrations were. They get into that on that episode. So I would check that out. But the gist is that if you are unhappy with the amount of sex or the lack of sex that you're having, it's a conversation. It's all about communicating and expressing that, because that's not like, you know, that's not fair to you. And even if it were reverse, I would say the same thing. Like if he was unhappy, I would want him to tell you too. And not in a way that's like, you're not having sex with me enough and you should be and blah, blah, blah. No, absolutely not. Just like, it makes me so happy when we're intimate. It makes me feel close to you. And I feel like doing it, you know, only once a week right now that we're not as close. And like, is there anything that we can do? Like maybe anything that we can try that's different or that gets you into it more, you know, or is there anything going on like mentally, mental block, work stuff? Because I want to be there for you and I want to like get you back in the mood, or maybe like we should go to the gym, work out more. That always makes people, you know, hornier, if you didn't know that. That's a fun fact, but definitely listen to that episode because there are experts who know a lot better than me.
Hi, Lindsay. Love your podcast. I'm so happy for you, Stephen, for Zachary. I was curious, I don't know if there's an episode on this, please remind me of the episode, but I was curious to hear your opinion on rules regarding long-distance relationships. I just started one and would really be interested in your rules about this type of relationship, because a lot of things aren't going to apply, or they just kind of apply a little differently. So thank you.
For this question, I would say the rules, honestly, and I get this question so much, like the rules are the same. You still do all of the rules. It's just that when you're together is when you kind of apply them, and you can factor in, like, let's say, right, the don't sleep with them on the first date. That doesn't change because you're long distance. Like it's still don't sleep with them on the first weekend, right? Like that you spend together. There are other things that you can do, or the like, let them initiate text more. That still applies, right? Like all of this stuff still applies. You should still be letting them lead. But of course, like you can compromise in terms of going to them and them coming to you. Like you don't always have to go to them and et cetera. But if there are any specific rules that you're confused about when it comes to long distance versus an in-person, like, you know, always being in the same place dating situation, then DM me because I'd be happy to help. And then maybe we can do a dedicated episode to it.
Hi, Lindsay. I just wanted to know how you would apply the rules to long distance dating.
Oh my God, this is so weird. I swear that wasn't planned. That's crazy. Okay, wait, I'm going to keep playing this.
I feel like when you are in a long distance relationship or, you know, in the beginning, you're not just going to spend, you know, 2-3 hours on a date with someone. You're going to be spending likely 2-3 days. So I just want to know how the rules would apply to that scenario. And I feel like things just kind of feel like they move at a much faster pace in a lot of ways. But I want to know your take on how you would apply your rules to long distance dating. Thank you.
Okay, that's so funny because I was literally just like, give me an example, and the other person did. I would say that for the don't spend more than 2-3 hours on a date, obviously this one cannot apply in the same way, right? You're spending days with them, exactly. But in the same way, like, you should never like extend your trip and be like, oh, I don't want to leave. Should I stay? You know, like, be someone who is busy and is like, this was a really amazing visit. Would love to talk to you about planning the next one. But of course, you know, when you're with them in person, you're spending that time with them and you are just letting it happen. And, you know, the rules are kind of out the window when it comes to the hours and the amount of time you spend together when you're in person. But I think it's nice to have like a cadence, have the next time that you guys are going to see each other, but before you leave, you know, and like, maybe he is the instigator of that time. But I do think it requires more compromise. And to be honest, it requires a rock star of two humans to be in a long distance relationship. I could not do it. So kudos to you. And I hope you enjoy the episode with Elisa. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples, because if you know me, you know that my allergies are the worst and they're also so random. There are a lot of them are environmental, like pollen and just where things grow. It's so random. I'm allergic to the skin of fruit. Like, that's how random it is. And I just don't know what I would do this spring season without Astapro, because it is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray, and it starts working in 30 minutes, while all the other allergy sprays take hours. And who has hours when you're having allergies? They could be detrimental, and I could be recording like this because of my allergies, but I'm not because of Astapro. It is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. I am now using Astapro every time my nasal allergies flare up, and I'm always amazed at how fast I am back in the game. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Back to the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acne. I'm so excited to be here with Elisa Vitti. She is a women's hormone expert, the founder and CEO of flowliving.com, the best-selling author of Woman Code and In the Flow, and creator of the top-ranked MyFlow period improvement app, and the creator of the cycle syncing method. Hi, Elisa.
Hey, it's so good to be here.
So great to have you. So much to discuss today.
All the things.
All the things. So I recently shared my story with my listeners about having PCOS, about the struggles that I went through to conceive and all of that. But I've never had someone come on the podcast who knows, you know, from a legit standpoint about what PCOS is. You were diagnosed with it when you were much younger. So what was that like, and kind of how did you figure out what was happening to you?
That was truly a life-changing experience, you know, because I was, like many women with PCOS, dealing with symptoms for probably a decade. And, you know, it was only, and I was being kind of really disregarded every time I would go in to say, you know, I feel like something is wrong, you know, and my cycle also is totally, you know, MIA. I was really kind of just brushed aside and said, well, it's probably just normal for you to be irregular and we can always put you on the pill. And it wasn't until things kind of reached what I always call this sort of hormonal hot mess, critical mass situation where I was over 200 pounds, I'm only 5'6", where I was covered face, chest, and back in painful cystic acne, where I, you know, really only bled a total of 6 times between the age of 12 and 22. And a couple of those were chemically induced bleeds with synthetic progesterone. So I really didn't have much of a cycle at all. And then it was starting to affect my mental health as well. So it was sort of like this anxiety, depression, insomnia, misery that I really just decided to take matters into my own hands as far as trying to figure out what was wrong with me, because going to, you know, top doctors were not getting me result, any sort of headway in terms of what it was I had and what I should do. So I happened to be a student at Johns Hopkins University planning to become an OBGYN. And so I was in the library all the time trying to research what it was that I could have. And I came across an obstetrics journal where they had this tiny little article. I remember it was like 1 inch long and it was very long and vertical. And it just described all of my symptoms exactly. And it described a disorder called Stein-Leventhal disease, which was the original name given to PCOS by the two gentlemen who figured it out. And I felt excited, you know, when I read it, because I thought, this is it. This is what I got. Now I have a diagnosis. I'm sure they have something for this. I marched into my gynecologist's office the next day and she said, let's do some testing. We did the testing. It came back that it was correct that I had PCOS. And then she said, sorry, we didn't figure this out for such a long time. I said, no worries. Let's just get to the what's next part. And then that's when sort of my whole life and perspective changed. And she said, you know, we don't know what causes this. We don't have a cure. It's going to get progressively worse over the course of your life. This will, you know, sort of have an increased risk for you to develop diabetes, heart disease, obesity, cancer, dementia, forget about having kids on your own naturally. And we'll just, you know, medicate those symptoms as best we can all throughout your life. You know, here I am 21, 22 when this was happening.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, I had a very profound moment in the chair, but I thought first, wow, this is the best option that I have. This is all that somebody like me has to look forward to. That feels so wrong. You know, it feels like we should have more in the, you know, in this modern age. So I remember my doctor saying, okay, I'd like to write you a prescription for birth control. And as she was doing it, kind of time slowed down, things went into slow motion. And I heard, as crazy as this sounds, I heard my body say very clearly, that's not your future. So she was like pen to paper. And I said, I just repeated what I heard. I said, that's not my future. It's not what I want to do. And that really was a profound moment, not just because I was hearing my body communicate with me, but because I recognized so many things all at the same time. One, here I was, one person that was part of an enormous demographic of women who were suffering not just from PCOS, but all the other conditions that current gynecology doesn't really have a great solution for, things like fibroids, endometriosis, adenomyosis, cystic ovaries, you name it, right? There's just so many cramps, you know, there's just so many things, PMS, that we just don't have any solutions for. And it really opened my eyes to the fact that conventional medicine needed to do more research and figure out better solutions for women. And then it just sort of lit this fire in me to figure this out for myself. And I made a little promise to myself that if I could figure it out, that I would then build a platform for all of these women who are having hormonal issues to make understanding what is going on and dealing with what is going on easy, natural, safe. And that's what we've done. We're actually celebrating our 10-year anniversary just this year of Flow Living. So it's been really a total transformation of not only my health, but also my career. And then to have figured it out, right, to watch, to have really understood how our endocrine system works, what it is that we need to do to take care of it, to watch my body recover its own hormonal balance was pretty life-changing as well, right? To see my skin clear up, to see the 50 pounds melt off and stay off without extreme dieting or restrictions, to get my cycle back, right? And to have had that back ever since, you know, it came back was really great. So it's definitely been a journey of understanding that the current narrative that we have around what our hormones and our periods are supposed to do, right, which is to make you miserable, is not true. And to really dial in the correct process for any woman to figure out how to restore her own hormonal balance. That's sort of been my life's work.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And for someone like me who, similarly to you, was like diagnosed with this thing that I had no idea what it was, you know, even years later, like I was diagnosed at age 32 today, like, you know, a year ago, whatever it is, six months ago. And there still is like nothing that they say to you, like that doctors say to you, except for like birth control, you know, birth control will help, or these supplements that you can order on Amazon, or, you know, like I think metformin was thrown out there. Like it's always something that isn't natural. It's so interesting to me that you found this out before, like, let's say you had taken that birth control, you know, like it masks what's actually happening. And I'm not saying like no one should ever take birth control who has PCOS. I'm sure there are benefits and, you know, people should do what they want to do. But for me, being on birth control for 15 years was masking all of this. And I had no idea that there was anything wrong with my body. And then the second I got off of it, I never got my period. Never. Like you mentioned, you know, your cycle being off. I didn't have a cycle. When I went off, I didn't ever get my period. And I did everything supposedly right. And I never got it.
Can I ask? Yeah. Can I ask, when you went on it the 15 years prior,
right,
were you having a cycle then? Why did you go on it in the first place?
I was having a cycle. And I think I had a normal cycle for 2 years. And that's what's so confusing to me. And I wonder if you have any like answers about this, because I never, like the only PCOS symptom that I had, but also I was going through puberty, was acne. And I didn't have any, like I was always the same weight my whole life. And I was getting a normal period. It was heavy, but it was normal. And I went on birth control because I wanted to start having sex and like be safe and whatever. And you know, that was just a thing that moms did when I was 15 or 16, they would be like, okay, it's time to go on birth control. You know, you got to be safe. And no one knew anything about it. And so I went on for like to protect myself if I were to lose my virginity at some point, you know, I didn't go on because of anything PCOS related. So I was shocked when I went off. I mean, I thought I would have to like actively stop myself from getting pregnant the moment I went off birth control. And it was a complete opposite experience. I never got my period. And then 6 months after being off birth control was when I started, all my PCOS symptoms started to show themselves.
Mm. So many things to say. The first is, I wish that we all got the proper information about how our fertility works. For any woman who's struggling to conceive, you know that you cannot get pregnant any moment of the month. So the fear mongering that we do to teenage girls of the like, you know, oh, you could get pregnant at any time. And therefore, the only solution is to shut off all of your own sex hormone production, which is what the pill does, right? You take this synthetic low dose of hormones that puts you in a pseudo postmenopausal like state, hormonally speaking, changes your brain chemistry. Dr. Sarah Hill has talked a lot about how it can change your personality, right? Fundamentally. Do this also while the brain hasn't even finished developing, because puberty doesn't complete until, one could argue, 25 years of age in the brain. And just interrupt that whole process, right? And if there's any issues happening in the body, by virtue of taking that medication, shortchange yourself the opportunity of having the chance to observe what is going on and to quickly course correct while you're young and your body is so easily much more resilient, you know, in terms of self-healing. It's so frustrating, you know, and I hope that mothers in the future you know, will, because they're coming of age and learning about this now for themselves, really understand how to empower their daughters in this teen moment to say, listen, the facts are the egg is viable for 48 hours and sperm can live in the body for 5 days. So we've got to cover you for a maximum of, you know, 5 days before, a couple days after, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're talking like 7 days. And with the advances in femtech, you know, wearable devices that can monitor BBT, right? If you're wearing an Oura ring, for example, you can know exactly when you're ovulating. And then you can just sort of be in a habit of cycle tracking and using a barrier method only on the moments when that is required. And it's just as effective. There's another app called Natural Cycles.
Yeah.
That's equally effective as birth control and condoms, right? So we no longer have to just assume that the only way to prevent unwanted pregnancies are sort of this old technology of, you know, shutting off all your hormones. It's a little bit overkill, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of that. And then of course, all the opportunity costs from the health point of view is what you've experienced. Your PCOS, without knowing all of your sort of specific health history, you know, details, what I can say is a lot of women can develop a PCOS-like reaction to being on that medication for such a long time because birth control depletes your micronutrient levels pretty profoundly and disrupts your gut microbiome pretty specifically, right? So these are two key factors from an endocrine system point of view for you to have a normal and healthy cycle. You need to have adequate levels of micronutrients and you need to have a healthy gut microbiome in order for you to make a healthy balance of hormones. So it's hard to know if you had any of the issues beforehand because they do tend to surface pretty immediately in a younger person. But it could be that you, in that 15-year period of time, just got to a place of a lot of micronutrient depletion, a lot of gut dysbiosis. Maybe you were taking antibiotics for other things that compounded the issue, other medication. There's a lot of reasons why you could end up depleted with dysbiosis and inflamed in other, right. other reasons. And that could throw off your endocrine function to a pretty significant degree. And, you know, I think that from a conventional point of view, there's less understanding about the temporary nature of that. And there's more of a desire to create, you know, some sort of diagnosis. You know, I don't know if you had blood work, if you had, you know, ultrasounds, if you had things that definitively show that this was happening for you, you may have, and they may have come back positive, which is, it's good. It's good for you to have a diagnosis. At the same time, the things that helped push you over the edge to developing or presenting with this PCOS are the ways that you help walk yourself back from it. But the challenge is when you're on a fertility journey that you feel that pressure to get your cycle back and get pregnant right away, because you'd spent 15 years on the pill and now you want to get pregnant right away, there is no time that you feel that you can devote to helping yourself restore your cycle. And then now you're going to potentially be in a situation where you might have to go down the rabbit hole of using ART like IVF, which is totally fine if you have to use it, but it's not, you know, it's just going from one set of medicating yourself to another. When if you had been able to really understand how your hormones work from the jump and take care of them every day, right? Just like, you know, in the biohacking world, right? All these guys are like, yeah, I'm going to take care of my circadian rhythm and my hormones. I'm going to eat for, you know, optimal metabolic function and brain function and sexual function. Like that's something that they are excited about, understanding how their hormones work and caring for them every day. But for women, what I've observed over 20 something years of helping push this narrative forward is that women really have been so deeply conditioned with a toxic set of mythology, which is like your hormones are nuts. You're a victim of whatever is going on. And it's completely ununderstandable, right? So complicated. No one can possibly know what's going on. Therefore, all you can do, throw your hands up in the air, give up, joke about it, commiserate about it with your friends, and, you know, suffer, right?
Yeah.
But that's just, it's just not true. It's like so you know, unequivocally not true. The truth is you just have to understand how it works. And then you have to get into action every day to really care for these hormones. And that's what we help women do at Flow Living all the time. That's why the app is so beloved, because it's the, like, it's a, not a period tracker, right? It's a period improvement app. What is the point of tracking your period if you're not using it as the biomarker it's intended to be, right? In 2016, I think the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists decreed that your cycle must now be considered forevermore a fifth vital sign. You know, the other ones they take in the ER, super important. So is your cycle, but you don't have that orientation to it. You don't have that relationship to it. You think, ah, it's this pain in the butt thing I have to sort of deal with. It's a nuisance, it's a drag, it's bringing me down, or it's something I just want to ignore. In fact, it's something you want to be really intimate with and looking at every day and caring for it every day and learning how to, you know, eat and move. And that's how also the cycle syncing method was born, because we needed a structure in order for us to interact with this and care for it.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the cycle syncing method in a little bit. It's so interesting that you said that, like, should be a fifth vital, because I remember when I, the in-between between going off birth control, which, by the way, I wanted to do much earlier than I did. But many people, including doctors, were like, no, you should wait till after your wedding, which we'll circle back to.
So risky. So mm-hmm. risky.
Yep. So that moment between going off birth control after my wedding and a year and a half later getting pregnant through IVF, in that in-between, I never in my life thought that I would miss having my period. And I can't explain to you how jealous I would be when friends were like, oh, I have my period. I was like, these girls don't know how lucky they are that they have a period.
Oh,
like, I never even thought about it like that. You know,
I know that feeling. So yeah, from 12 to 22, everybody was getting their period but me, and they were
right.
Didn't know how good they had it.
Totally.
Yep, I totally get that.
I know that there are, like, different versions or types of PCOS. And I also realize that we haven't even defined what it is for people listening. So we probably should do that. I think that I have post-pill PCOS. I don't know if that's even a real thing. But Alisa, can you define PCOS for anyone who's just not familiar?
Yeah, polycystic ovarian syndrome is sort of the scenario in which the hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis is not working properly, which translates into the conversation between the brain and the ovaries is not firing the way that it should, and therefore you do not ovulate or menstruate in any regular cadence. There's also sort of secondary issues in terms of your ability to metabolize sugar properly. And there can be issues with excess levels of androgens as well, which can cause some of the unwanted things around acne and hair growth and hair loss and you know, weight. It's sort of another piece of it. But that's fundamentally what it is. And there can be the presentation of multiple small cysts along the ovary, although that's not always the case. There isn't one diagnostic test that shows definitively that you have it. It's more looking at a constellation of symptoms that fit this pattern of disorder in the body around the cycle.
Yeah.
So that can make it very challenging to get to a diagnosis very quickly, and also frustrating for the patient to try to understand, you know, where they are. And some women have weight as an issue, and other women can be look like ballerinas and not have any weight issues, but still not cycle. And so it can be very, very varied from person to person.
Yeah.
I went to my favorite Pilates class the other day and everyone was like, what is that cute athleisure that you're wearing? And I, of course, was like, it's my Roback. It is so soft. It is the best active wear. I'm obsessed with it. It's perfect for hiking, Pilates, berries, like literally any workout that you want to do. It's amazing. And it's good for transitioning through the seasons, for postpartum. They have the most incredible women's joggers and hoodie sets for this, like, in between weather where sometimes it's kind of cold and sometimes it's not. And they also have an activewear dress, and it's genius. They make it so that you're able to keep your dress on when you're on the go. And if you gotta go, you know what I mean? Everything is so comfortable. The fabric is lightweight and breathable, perfect for a day on the move. My personal favorite are their Swift crew necks, which are so soft, and I wear them all the time over my workout stuff. So if you haven't already, it's now time to try out some Roback. Use the code ACME on roback.com for a generous 20% off your first order through the end of this week. That's spelled R-H-O-B-A-C-K.com. That's 20% off all hoodies, joggers, crews, and more with code ACME. Stay comfortable this spring with Roback and check out their crew necks. Let me tell you, those are the softest things I have ever worn. And they're really good when I'm like, you know, in between this weather moment and I don't want to be sweating by the time I get to my workout class. I even keep it on for class for a little because it's so freaking soft. Anyway, go to roback.com and use code ACME.
And also, and this was just my experience, but I'm sure that someone listening has had a similar one. I went to a fertility clinic because I was less focused on, do I have PCOS? That time I didn't know what that was. And more like, I need to get my period because I want to start trying to get pregnant. And so I went to a fertility place and they had done, you know, tests and they had done ultrasounds and they had done blood work and all the things. And they knew that I had PCOS and they didn't tell me because they didn't deem it relevant to what their plan for me was. So I didn't know that. And then we went to go speak to a different place, which was a smaller place that gives you more individualized attention. And I got an ultrasound with the smaller place. And within seconds, while she was doing my ultrasound, she said, you have textbook PCOS.
Mm.
And the place before, because I had like the cysts or whatever it's called, mm-hmm. Or the string of pearls, as they say,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She said, you have textbook PCOS, and they knew and they didn't tell you. And I think that's so important to, you know, get more than one opinion, because some of these places, especially if it's a big fertility place that's making money off of you doing whatever plan they have for you, they're not going to tell you because they don't have to, which is so scary. And so like, if you're hearing this right now and you're like, I feel like I have at least two of these symptoms and I just want to get it checked out, and someone tells you you don't have it, get a second opinion or a third, because that was a really shocking, like I'd never had like a medical experience where information was withheld from me.
Wow. That's a first. I've definitely not heard that before, but you know, super concerning that, you know, anyone would put profit over people, you know, in terms of information. But, you know, I suppose these things happen. And I'm glad that you found that sort of second place that gave you the information, because, you know, why is it important that you would know, right, as you're going through a fertility process? Because there's so much you can do to support the IVF journey, right? Because
Exactly. That's
the other thing. If you have to go through an IVF journey, then you want to support your body as much as possible, right? A study just came out this week that talked about how higher stimulation cycles of IVF can lead to potentially more eggs being produced by the ovary, but that they actually are lower in genetic viability, right? So you want to be able to go through the process with the least amount of stimulation as possible, and you want to do it the least amount of times as needed, right? And you want to have the like one and done successful implantation. That is something that you have to work on in conjunction with the medication plan and protocol that you're being put on. But you have to know what's going on behind the scenes in your own body if you have PCOS, if you have estrogen dominance, if you have other issues of inflammation, if you have autoimmune types of issues due to gut dysbiosis, you know, if you have, for example, unaddressed inflammation in the gut, this is a major immune system signal, right? There is an essential immune sort of moment that takes place at the moment of conception, of implantation, sorry. And at implantation, the specialized immune response of the endometrium encountering the embryo is so essential for implantation to be successful. If you have immune stuff happening because your gut microbiome has been destroyed and you have sort of leaky gut and you're having an autoimmune sort of reaction that you don't know about yet, but you have eczema, let's say, somewhere on your body that you just think is a little skin, you know, thing that's difficult to deal with. Well, no, that's not just eczema. There's something going on deeper in the system that could affect your transfer, right?
Right.
So, you know, there isn't anything that your conventional doctor can do for you, but there's a lot that you can do from a functional point of view, which is what we guide women to do all the time. You know, we treat women from their first bleed to their last. So whether they're dealing with menstrual issues or for, you know, they're going to try to conceive or they're dealing with perimenopause, we're here to really educate you on how you do that with food and supplements, regardless of what's going on from a medication point of view that you have to do. How do you take care of your hormones every day for yourself? Because that is 100% something you have to be doing.
Yeah. And that's, like, I always say skills, not pills. Like,
ooh, I love that.
That's what's going to make it last, you know, is like, you hear these people getting on these like rapid weight loss drugs and this and that. And it's like, okay, that's fine. And like, you know, if someone really needs it, it is what it is. But if you develop the skills of what to eat, that's going to, you know, help your body with live with PCOS, you know, and how to move and things like that, then that's so much more valuable. And the last thing I want to say about IVF, and then I want to hear about what you recommend, you know, food-wise and the cycle syncings, but something that PCOS, women with PCOS need to be aware of, and I'm sure this doesn't happen with everyone, but you mentioned it in the study that came out. So when going through IVF, you may get, so for the egg retrieval, right? You might get more eggs because of, you know, what PCOS is. It's an overproduction of the eggs, but that doesn't mean that they are good eggs necessarily. So for me, I think we got like a ridiculous amount of eggs. Like it was like in the 50s, okay? And the number after that went way down, way down. And my stomach got so large because I was, you know, all these eggs were waiting to be retrieved, I ended up developing something called OHSS.
Mm-hmm. And, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. Yep.
Yeah. And I couldn't walk for a week after the egg retrieval. And
well, they must have done a pretty intensive stimulation for you to produce that many eggs. And another thing to be aware of is the more eggs that you push out of the ovary in, you know, this sort of accelerated time frame, right? Mm-hmm. You think about it, over the course of your reproductive lifespan, you're meant to produce a handful of follicles every month and one egg every month, right? And then you sort of compound that math over, let's say, 30-ish years of having your cycle, maybe 40 years of having your cycle. And then you go into menopause, right? Or postmenopause after your last bleed. Well, part of your menopausal timing is determined by how many eggs are left in the ovary, right? And so if you're pushing through a lot of eggs to be released more rapidly, then you can actually, and this is something, if you press an IVF doctor, they will tell you that that is true. You can lose a few years on the other end and end up going into your postmenopausal years a couple of years early by overstimulating your ovaries to produce a ton of eggs. So it is important to understand if you have PCOS, because you may choose a less aggressive stim plan for the first or second time and get fewer eggs, but better quality eggs. And you have to be supplementing to support egg quality before. Anybody who's thinking about a future in which they may have to use assisted reproductive technology, which again is perfectly fine, if you are going to do that, you need to be, you know, really dialing in nutrition and supplementation at least bare minimum 3 months beforehand, but would be better if it were 6 months. And this is also true of women who are thinking of just conceiving naturally. Before I got pregnant, I stopped drinking alcohol for about a year. Mm-hmm. I haven't ever actually put it back in my diet. I'm going on like 10 years now. I stopped going for pedicures and manicures for like a year beforehand. I also haven't put that back into my life. Right. So those were like sort of two places where, outside of everything else I had already changed, those were two places where there was still some exposure to things that were endocrine disruptive. So I took those out. And then on top of that, I really dialed in my supplementation, coenzyme Q10, N-acetylcysteine, myo-inositol, the things that we have studies to show the efficacy of their absolute impact on egg quality, on blood sugar metabolism, on inflammation, all of these things. Improving those things improves your fertile ecosystem. I feel so strongly about preparing women for this, because you shouldn't have to learn about it after the fact, after you've had some suffering, after you've had miscarriages. You know, we should be given this education early on that you have to care for your hormones when you're menstruating, and you have to prepare your body dietarily before you want to conceive. It's not easy for ovaries anymore out there in the universe, so to speak, right? You're exposed to more chemicals in 30 days than your grandparents' generation was exposed to their entire lifetime. The amount of endocrine disruption that an average person is navigating on a day-to-day basis is unprecedented. And we have the updated World Health Organization statistics around fertility to show it was 1 in 10 couples. Now it's 1 in 8 couples who are struggling with fertility. It's getting worse. And on the other side of the equation, precocious puberty is up in boys and girls. So now boys and girls are going through puberty earlier because they're being exposed to all of these synthetic hormones. It's a bad scene. You have no choice but to take seriously your daily hormonal health care. And that's something that you've got to learn, and where the best place for you to do that. And supplements as well. They're, you know, we formulate those as well because it's so hard to find ones that are not made with excipients and other things that can disrupt your endocrine system, ironically. So
Right. Yeah,
I've just been building the tools and the support that I think I needed and that I think we all need. And I think it's just so important that we have a different kind of hormonal health care available to us that isn't just crisis management, but that's really about, you know, daily support and prevention.
Right. And by the way, I didn't know that about manicures and pedicures. I guess it makes sense when you think about it. It's obviously toxic, but that's very good to know. And I will be noting that for the future.
Yeah. Caffeine too. Even if you think it's all on you as the woman, if you have a male partner, studies show that if a man is drinking just 2 cups of coffee a day, that could increase miscarriage rates dramatically. It's the same. It's worse for women. You got to cut the caffeine out. Alcohol is a definite no-no. And yeah, there's lots to change. You've got to, the thing about preconception prep is it is part of the crucible, if you will. You know, when you become a mother, it's like cellularly changing and spiritually changing in terms of, you know, it puts you through a transformational process and hardwires you to care for this other person, which it turns out the same choices you'll be faced to make when you have the little peanut in your hands, right? And you have to stay at home to breastfeed instead of going out or do some things differently because you have the baby. You have to start doing those things 6 months to a year before you want to get pregnant as well. And that whole process of making those choices, energetically aligning with the fact that you want to care for another person, changing your lifestyle even before the baby arrives, it all is part of that process of transforming into your mother version of yourself, which is a beautiful thing if you embrace
it. Totally. So I want to talk about cycle thinking, and I'm sure a lot of people relate to this. I, you know, again, as I mentioned, like was told not to go off birth control until I was ready to have a baby, like that next day, literally. It was terrible advice. I obviously struggled with my PCOS, and I didn't have the precious time that other people might have to figure it out figure it out in terms of skills. What I did do is I made lifestyle changes. I started eating, you know, better foods. I started eating less sugar and carbs, and I introduced like new things into my diet. But I didn't have the luxury of time to wait to get my cycle on my own.
Yeah.
If you are listening and, you know, let's say you're in the same boat that I was, I guess it's like, what can you do in that short amount of time? Let's say you have no more than a year, no more than 6 months. And then on the flip side, like, what can you do if you do have the time? And that's, I think, where cycle syncing comes in.
So if you don't have a cycle, you can't be cycle syncing, right? So if you don't have a cycle and you're, you know, sort of in a compressed time frame in terms of conception, then the most important thing that you can do is really start using the flow protocol, which is detailed in my first book, Woman Code. You know, you want to make sure that you're eating for blood sugar stability every meal, every day. You want to manage your cortisol levels with stress management and exercise and supporting your circadian rhythm with blue light blocking glasses, AM sun exposure, you know, PM, you know, sleep hygiene. And then you want to work on estrogen and the gut and all of the things that need to be metabolized in terms of that. And so there's a food process that you want to go through and also a supplementation process, right? You want to really boost the nutrition via your macronutrients to support baseline endocrine function. But then you also want to really nourish and replenish what has likely been depleted in you for quite a while, whether it be, is because you had been on birth control, you had other life stressors, or you've just been living more of a traditional everybody day-to-day life of like lots of caffeine, which strips your nutrients, or lots of alcohol, which, I mean, it's like, it's hard to avoid that micronutrient depletion. And if you don't have a cycle, that's a key indicator that you are depleted. So if you're wondering, well, how do I know? You can't make hormones if you don't have adequate nutrition and nutrients. So the balance supplements that I formulated were the first set of formulations that I put together because this micronutrient depletion is so rampant. So we looked at, you know, what are those essential micronutrients that everyone's endocrine system needs to function properly. And that's what's in the balance supplement. So you have to start taking things like magnesium and B vitamins and vitamin D3. 93% of idiopathic infertility, where there's no known cause, shares a vitamin D3 deficiency. So you change the vitamin D3 levels, and then all of a sudden fertility comes back online, for example. So there's all of that. And then on top of that, you want to really use those specialty supplements as you get 6 months out from when you want to actually try to conceive, or even 3 months out, which would be those things that I mentioned, which are also in our Nurture product. So N-acetylcysteine, coenzyme Q10, myo-inositol, a couple of other things that really help the body reduce inflammation, boost ovulation regularity, boost egg quality, and the things that are really important as your body is making eggs close to the time where you might have one harvested if you're going to go through the ART route with IVF or some other procedure. So that's if you have no time, that's what you got to do. And then obviously cut out any and all endocrine disruptors, no more alcohol, no more caffeine, make sure all your products at home are chemical free. Synthetic fragrances are out. They studied last month, it was everything in the news was about the studies around artificial fragrance and how endocrine disruptive it is. You got to help yourself as much as you can and remove any and all things that could impair your body's ability to conceive. If you have time to get your cycle back, right, you're going to do all the things that we talked about first, right? You're going to do the Flow protocol first. You can pick up Woman Code, go through that process, or you can come to Flow Living and go through the process on the app and take the balance supplements. And then once you get your cycle back, then you want to start the cycle syncing method, because this is what I detailed in my second book, In the Flow, when I was pretty surprised to discover that we have a second biological rhythm that no one's ever talked about before. So everybody knows about their circadian rhythm. And it turns out women in their reproductive years have a second biological clock. And I'm the first person to write about it in that book. And it's called the infradian rhythm. And it governs a lot more than just when you ovulate and menstruate. It affects major systems of your body, from your brain to your metabolism, to your immune system, to your stress response system, and your reproductive hormones. It is essential, just as essential as our circadian rhythm. And even though in the biohacking community, we have, and just general mainstream conversation, everybody talks about supporting our circadian rhythm. It's so well documented, but no one's talking about how essential it is to support the infradian rhythm, although they are a little bit more now since the book came out in 2020. And when I discovered this rhythm, I said, my goodness, just like we need a lifestyle that supports our circadian rhythm, we need a lifestyle to support this infradian rhythm. And so I created something called the cycle syncing method, which essentially maps your caloric intake, exercise intensity, and what you're doing during the day onto each of the four phases of the cycle, the follicular, ovulatory, luteal, and menstrual phases of the cycle, because each of those four phases has unique hormone ratio patterns that require specific support. So you need fewer calories in the first half of the month, and you need 279 more calories after ovulation to keep your blood sugar stable at the same degree every day. You can do more intense workouts in the first half of the month. You can still do from a cardio point of view. In the second half of the month, you can do lots and lots of strength training and you can do walking. You don't have to like sit down and do nothing, but you just don't want to do, let's say, HIIT workouts or like a boot camp cardio class.
Right.
And when you dial this kind of support in, what you end up doing is keeping blood sugar consistently stable every day. You keep cortisol levels nice and steady every day. You reduce inflammation. And what this does is protect the cycle month over month, right? Because anytime you disrupt blood sugar, you disrupt ovulation, you disrupt the, you know, you have more PMS, that all becomes a problem. And you decrease your fertility over time too. Mm-hmm. So it protects your cycle. It protects your fertility. It slows down hormonal aging when you go through perimenopause. It is the way for women to take care of themselves, period, pun intended.
But it's not just for people with PCOS. Like anyone can.
Oh no, it's for anyone who has a cycle. Mm-hmm. You must care for that infradian rhythm. You must care for your cycle. And the cycle syncing method is the only method that does that. And you see it's gone viral now all over TikTok and Instagram because it's the truth, right? We have our hormones are constantly changing. So the whole past where we were told, well, you're probably just a smaller version of a dude. So to compensate, you should like eat fewer calories and work out more. And yeah, we're going to leave all women in their reproductive years out of all of medical fitness and nutrition research, but we'll just throw you some crumbs of things you can try. Meanwhile, all those things that you are trying are going to disrupt your infradian rhythm and your hormones. But, you know, good luck, right? That's where we've been at, just to paint a picture around it. And everything you've ever tried has never given you the results that it has promised because it was not factoring in your biology.
Right. So it was just like, oh, you have your period. Here's a pint of ice cream. Good luck.
Or the opposite, like don't let your period stop you. Do everything, be the same every day. Mm. Men don't do this to themselves because they haven't been conditioned to do this to themselves. But men appreciate the fact that their hormones change on a 24-hour clock, circadian clock. And they organize their calorie intake and their workout intensity to match the hormonal changes that they experience in a 24-hour period. This is the norm, the standard of self-care for them. I'm simply suggesting that women do the same thing, but we don't exist only on a 24-hour clock. We also exist on this 28-day schedule. And Mother Nature has given us this structure of the four phases of the cycle to use as the roadmap. So when you're in follicular phase, you do certain things that are different from what you do for your self-care in your luteal phase, for example, and for every phase. And the goal is not to strive to be the same every day. It's to allow yourself to be just as dynamic as your hormonal patterns so that you can, whether you have PCOS or fibroids or endometriosis or just garden variety PMS, whatever cramps, whatever it is, that you use this methodology to massively shift your hormonal situation so that those symptoms can be reduced, if not eliminated, and you can preserve and protect your fertility and your hormonal aging process for years to come.
Yeah. So I was told, and I'm curious your opinion, now that I am pregnant and I still have PCOS technically, I was told that it's actually more important than ever that I kind of like am careful to be eating the right foods during the pregnancy, as opposed to like, you know, when it's just me that I'm worrying about. Do you agree with that?
I think that's true for any pregnant woman. I think, you know, if you went into the pregnancy pre-diabetic, for example, which some women with PCOS are, then I could appreciate that comment perhaps. But if you went in with normal blood sugar levels, then, you know, then I would say your risk is very likely similar to just any pregnancy. But every pregnant woman has to manage her blood sugar levels. But that's also kind of a myopic view because when we look at the world of what's happening in the conversation around longevity, the whole conversation is geared around managing your blood sugar levels. The better you manage your blood sugar levels, the less you will develop diseases of inflammation that make aging problematic. So blood sugar stability is the essential driver. And why is that? And I wrote about this a decade ago in Woman Code. Because when I was understanding, how do we reboot the endocrine system? How do we go from having hormonal imbalance to regaining hormonal balance? Mm-hmm. The key was looking at, well, how does this endocrine system thing function in the first place? And the thing functions, the first thing it wants to do, the most important job that the endocrine system has, is to safeguard the transport of glucose to the brain, to the heart, to the muscle tissue. If you do anything to mess with that job, then all this other stuff starts to happen that is disruptive. And over time, you will have all sorts of health issues.
Right.
So yes, you do have to be careful with your blood sugar, but that's true for every human. And
yeah,
especially for any pregnant woman, but definitely is just flat out true in general.
Yeah. What are your top three favorite, I don't know if favorite's the right word, but most recommended foods for women with PCOS?
You know, that's, I love those questions because they're bad questions. Because I think it's an old way to think about how do we, you know, is there a perfect food? Is there a good food? It stems from the diet culture, right? Of like magazine articles that are like, you're the best foods for weight loss, the best foods for your skin. You know, really, when you look at the system of how the body functions, it's not about a particular food. You know, I'm not here to tell you spinach is more advantageous than a sweet potato or kale. It's really about what macronutrient combinations can you eat that keep your blood sugar stable? You've got to measure that.
Right. Like, what do you pair it with?
Right. So, you know, for you in the morning, the most important thing you can do first thing in the morning, pregnant or not, is to make sure that that breakfast that you have keeps your blood sugar stable. So if you're cycle syncing, then in the first half of your cycle, maybe you're having a protein smoothie with a good fat component. But in the second half of the cycle, you're having something that looks more like eggs with sweet potatoes and a whole bunch of broccoli and, you know, other onions and mushrooms, you know, something that's really hearty and nourishing, that's going to be slow burning carbohydrates that keep your blood sugar as stable as possible. And then you're going to do that again at lunch, and you're going to do that again at dinner. Right. So there's that from a whole foods, plant forward, clean meats point of view. There's a huge variety of things you can eat. Things, a better thing to look at maybe would be, what are things to avoid? I would definitely get you off of gluten. I would definitely get you off of dairy, because these are things that are known to increase the sort of permeability of the gut, which is going to make your life more difficult from a hormonal healing point of view.
Oh, and I love dairy.
And then, but there's good dairy to have. You can have A2 based dairy. So you can have sheep, goat, you can have cow dairy that's labeled A2. Mm. But you can't have any A1 dairy. A1 dairy opens up the lining of the intestinal tract and creates that whole autoimmune response. You don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And then any sort of artificial sweeteners or added sugars, these three things are bad for everyone's hormones.
Right.
So I would 100% get you focused on making sure that's not a regular part of your diet, or even a remotely, you know, frequent part of your diet. And I would have you start, you know, really thinking about whole foods based meals three times a day. And that can, and you don't have to be afraid of carbs. You know, you can have, you could have quinoa, you can have brown rice, you can have buckwheat, you can have sweet potatoes. It isn't about eliminating food groups with PCOS. It's really about, what is the quantity of that food group that you can have without spiking your blood sugar? And that's something that you can measure with a continuous glucose monitor, or you can get a glucometer. You can kind of really start to understand, get a couple of data points, and then start making your new normal game plan out of that.
Yeah. All right. I have one last question, and then I'm going to ask you, is what is the biggest myth about PCOS that you just want to like punch in the face?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think we've probably heard me say it 10 different ways today, but that you are stuck with it for life. That's not true, right? You can put your PCOS, you can really manage it into remission if you use diet and supplementation and lifestyle strategically. And that's really good news. You can have a different hormonal outcome by just changing your dietary inputs.
Yeah, I love it. This has been so amazing. I could ask you questions all day, but in the interest of timing, will you leave us with a quote or piece of advice?
Yes. As I am often quoted, I say, let the form of your self-care follow the function of your hormones.
I love it. Where can everybody find you? Read your books, sign up for Flow Living, start cycle syncing, all the things.
Okay. You can find, first of all, the app is free. So download the MyFlow app. You can go to flowliving.com and click on the app tab and download that for free. You can use that in conjunction with all of your other favorite period trackers, because again, our app is about period improvement, not just tracking when you're ovulating and menstruating. And you can go to the Flow Living website. And if you're not sure what it is you're dealing with, you can take our free online assessment to help you understand and evaluate what your hormones mean and start working toward a customized care plan for your own issues. You can find the books wherever books are sold. One is called In the Flow and the other one is called Woman Code. You can find me online on Instagram and TikTok at Flow Living and at Alisa.Beattie. And I think that's everything as far as where you can find me.
Thank you so much, Alisa. This was awesome. It was so helpful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.